Do you ever get the sense that no matter how hard you try, you just can't keep all the balls in the air at the same time? Well, for me, I'm trying to run a business, support a teenage daughter, be a supportive wife, I've got aging parents. No matter how hard I try to squeeze exercise into my crazy schedule, my waistline expands. Regardless, I forget stuff and lurch between one anxious moment and another. As a woman in her 50s, my brain and body is in a constant physiological whirl. It is so hard to keep up, and sometimes how I feel about all this becomes pretty dark and scary. Fortunately, or unfortunately, I'm not alone. There are an estimated 400,000 of us here in Scotland stumbling through the monumental changes that happen to our bodies in our middle years and the emotional fallout that that brings. So for this episode of Speaking of Suicide, we're talking about menopause and its mental health consequences. As always, we might have a chat through some difficult territory. If you find it too difficult, please do press pause and get some support. You'll find all the info you need in the show notes. I'm Penny Stewart, and I'm with Dr. Sam Whiteside of Whiteside Wellbeing in Forres, who is a menopause and mental health specialist. Sam, thank you for meeting up with me. Lovely to meet you. Maybe we can start first of all by quantifying all this. Have we got any sense of just how many women are significantly impacted by menopause when it comes to the mental health side of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a Royal College of Psychiatry training module being made available by Louise Newson for doctors to work through and learn about such issues. And within that learning module, she states that suicidal ideation, so thoughts of suicide in perimenopausal women, is 7 times higher during that age and stage of life than at any other age and stage of a woman's life, which is quite staggering.
That's massive.
It's huge, yeah. And about 45 to 68% of women, perimenopausal women, will experience depressive symptoms alone, and 2 to 4% of those women will get what we call clinically significant depression. And that's obviously, we've spoken about depression, there are other things such as, you know, anxiety, the tearfulness, emotion. We can feel the rage and anger with this brain fog, word finding difficulties. That's simply depression alone. And in terms of suicide, so in the National Records of Scotland states 186 female deaths in 2024 alone, with the age specific suicide rates being highest in, it's a big range, it's between 25 to 64, but the Samaritans particularly picked up on the fact that age range 45 to 64 years of age is being a high risk band. And between the years 2000 to 2024, the average age of death, and this is in men and women combined, this specific data had increased from 42 to 47 and a half. So those sort of, in women, certainly those perimenopausal years.
I don't get the impression that this is something we talk about very much, not the mental health side of menopause. Am I right in that? Or I mean, is there a lack of conversation about this, do you think? If so, why?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a lack of conversation about it. Even amongst some of my friends that have started to speak to me about the menopause, I then maybe opened up to them about some of the, you know, emotional well-being symptoms I had had. They said, actually, Sam, me too. And when women come to me for counselling or within my GP work, because I'm also work as an NHS GP, they'll be talking to me about various menopause symptoms, some that you touched on, the problems with weight and achy bones, etc., sleep problems. And I'll say, you know, are you feeling, do you feel low? Are you feeling emotional? And then they will open up. So even if they've got to the menopause conversation, they haven't necessarily got to the mental health conversation.
Yeah, it's not something, and I'm a woman in the right age bracket.
Yeah.
It's not something I would have associated with menopause.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is why we're having this conversation today.
Yeah.
How did you get into this particular field, and how have you ended up focusing on menopause and mental health and women in their middle years? What was your path to all this?
Yeah, so it's a long path. I mean, I graduated 25 years ago, so I've been a doctor for 25 years, a GP for about 20 of those years. And within GP practice, as a female GP, you naturally do get women coming to you. You know, your majority of patients will be women. And actually, ironically, I think during my first pregnancy, I did my British Menopause Society menopause training. So I was pregnant when I was doing my menopause training because I saw a need for it. And then within my general practice work, women were coming to me about menopause. But equally, as a GP, we see an awful lot of people with emotional well-being problems, mental health problems. And it struck me that actually many of these people, again, many of them women, don't need prescriptions. They didn't need prescription drugs. They needed maybe lifestyle changes, maybe peer support, maybe support groups, all these different things. So that's when I decided to do my counselling training. So I did 3-year counselling diploma to become a trained counsellor. And it was 6 years ago I set up Whiteside Wellbeing, which initially I was counselling anyone and everyone. But again, sort of natural selection over those few years, it ended up being women. At one point it was largely mums, and then it was generally midlife women with mental health and emotional well-being problems. And it only really struck me a couple of years ago that actually all of this seemed to be coming together with some of the things that you'd mentioned at the beginning: perimenopausal years, stress at work, aging, elderly dependent parents, teenage children or children leaving home. Everything can happen within those midlife years. So it's not just about hormones, it's about everything else that can happen during those years. And clearly these are generalisations because not everybody's married, not everybody has kids, but just as a general feel for things. So that's where my work within Whiteside Wellbeing sits at the moment.
It certainly, I think, can feel like a perfect storm.
Yeah.
At this point in your life. But, I mean, focusing in on the physiological changes that are happening,
yeah,
what are the changes that happen in midlife and why do they have such a mental health aspect or emotional aspect to them? What's a connection?
Yeah. In terms of the science behind it, if you like, then there's estrogen receptors within various parts of the brain, areas such as the prefrontal cortex, the amygdala, hippocampus areas, all words I thought I wouldn't be using past medical school. But those areas, our body has alpha estrogen receptors and beta estrogen receptors. And the beta receptors are the ones that mediate anxiety, low mood, fear, memory and our learning capacity. So if we're having erratic and decreasing levels of estrogen in those midlife years, then those receptors can't help control our anxiety and our mood as well. And it's not just a case of those brain areas not getting the same amount of consistent estrogen. The estrogen helps the brain receptors get more serotonin, get more dopamine and get more glutamate. Okay, so people will have heard of serotonin. It's known as the happy hormone. Certain antidepressants actually work on increasing serotonin levels. But dopamine, again, people have heard of that. You get a dopamine hit, you know, with things like exercise, it makes you feel good. And glutamate equally helps build our mood up. So as well as sort of irregular and lowering estrogen levels, that affects the uptake of these three really, really important hormones, the serotonin, the dopamine and the glutamate. But estrogen isn't the only story. It obviously plays a part in our achy joints and our vasomotor symptoms, our flushes and sweats. But progesterone also gradually reduces in the midlife years. And progesterone in a woman is a naturally calming hormone. So when those levels start to go, our anxiety plays up. That's why a lot of women have anxiety. But progesterone also increases something known as allopregnanolone in our bodies, which is a natural antidepressant. So that starts to reduce. And testosterone, that also elevates dopamine. And when testosterone gradually, very slowly and gradually goes down, testosterone towards the later perimenopause years, then again, another factor impacting dopamine. So it's not just estrogen, it's the cascade of everything around it.
Put together all those
changes
in our hormones, or those changes in the neurotransmitters in the brain. And what are the typical kind of mental health symptoms that you're seeing in some of the women who are coming to you, Sam?
Yeah, so many. I'll start.
Where
I'll start, exactly. So they'll become sort of emotional, very over emotional, the statement, becoming over emotional, tearful. And it goes back to, why are women not talking about these symptoms? And I think a lot of it is to do with shame. Shame that they're acting these ways, whether it be at home and at work. They're becoming emotional, they're becoming tearful, whether it be at home or at work. They're getting rage and anger. They're shouting at their children, you know, more than they want to or need to, shall we say. You know, they're just having outbursts of rage. Rage is such a word I hear a lot. And then they get embarrassed. They get ashamed that they've spoken to their kids that way. I get people not coping at home or not coping at work because they're tired, because they're emotional, because they've got what's, you know, classically known as brain fog, or this word finding ability. And, you know, women are having suicidal thoughts as well, and they're ashamed of that, and they're scared of them. Because women that are having these suicidal thoughts during perimenopause years, it may actually be the first time they've experienced that kind of symptom. They may not necessarily have had any other depression, anxiety or suicidal ideation earlier on in their life. So it's really scary, and it can come on very suddenly. So there's a huge range of symptoms and signs that people speak to me about.
So there's hormones changing, and so physical and physiological changes in the body,
yeah,
which can lead to changes in these moods, these rages or whatever else. But I wonder how much of this is also about how we feel about the physical changes in our body. Mm-hmm. As a woman, mm-hmm, getting to the menopause age, because mm-hmm we are changing. I put my hand up with it. I struggle with it. I look in the mirror and think, what happened?
Yeah.
My hair isn't the same, and my skin isn't the same, and my body certainly isn't the same. And I wonder how much that also drives some of the mental side of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, beginning to feel that maybe a loss of identity or a loss of control of what's happening to us in terms of the body alone. You know, classically we'll start to, you know, gain weight easier than we used to. It's classically going around the middle, you know, the midlife spread. So there's a loss of control of what's happening to our body, and we look different, and we have less control over that than we used to. And, you know, equally, a loss of identity as to who we might be at home or at work because of the way we're acting or the way we're feeling. Our libido's going, we're getting achy joints, we're getting hot flushes and night sweats. You know, it's a very different us. I don't want every woman who might be heading into perimenopause thinking that this is going to happen to them. Mm. It's not. It's about 40% of women that are troubled with sort of mental health or emotional well-being symptoms during the perimenopausal stages by all manner of means, not everybody. But certainly worldwide, the International Menopause Society have recognised that emotional well-being and cognition symptoms are the third commonest symptoms of perimenopause and menopause worldwide. Within the UK, the top symptoms are sleep issues and the vasomotor symptoms, hot flushes and sweats, but worldwide, emotional well-being is the third recognised symptom.
And is there any correlation? Do we know if there's any correlation? I don't know if the research has been done, but do we know if there's any correlation between your susceptibility to mental health symptoms with menopause? You know, are you more likely to experience that if you've had depressive episodes in the past or mental health challenges in the past? Are there things that make us vulnerable?
Yeah, absolutely. So another important point that you raised is there is actually very little research being done in this area. There's very little studies on mental health and well-being and suicidality in that time. There's been a couple done by the Louise Newson and her team, along with Liverpool's John Moore University. There's a couple of good studies around the subject, but in general, there isn't. But absolutely, in terms of what's called perimenopausal mood disorder, you are more susceptible to these mental health challenges within the perimenopause years if you're somebody who's had really bad PMS or PMT, you know, premenstrual tension, or particularly if you've had PMDD, which is an extreme form of PMT, which comes with suicidal thoughts premenstrually, or if you're a woman that's had postnatal anxiety or depression. Equally, if you're a woman that may have had what's been bothered with something called contraceptive dysphoria, there'll be women out there that have had certain contraceptives that have made them really low in mood. So those, if you've had anything like that in the past, you are more susceptible and should maybe be more aware that it might happen to you in the perimenopausal years because it's more susceptible to the hormonal changes.
Sam, it strikes me a particular challenge, it sounds here, is for you in terms of talking to women and patients about this, is that it's complicated. It's not just about here's some physical and physiological changes in your body, ergo, you feel in a certain way. Context sounds to be really important. That stage in life where you may have children who are at a challenging stage. You are maybe looking after elderly parents. There's lots of other things that are changing as well as within you. What kind of challenges does that present you in terms of the approach to treating and supporting people who are struggling with this?
Yeah. I mean, actually, one of the outcomes of one of the Newson studies that was done showed that holistic care is very helpful in terms of managing this situation. So I will listen to women first and foremost. I will literally give them the space to tell me everything that is happening to them, what they're going through. But then I will start inquiring about different aspects of their life, whether it's what's happening at work, what's happening at home, have you got kids? And then I will sort of delve into their lifestyle, because lifestyle changes are so important at this stage as well. That's been picked up in studies. I'll speak to them about caffeine and alcohol and exercise and nutrition. So I suppose over the years I've developed this way of asking so many questions. And if any of my previous or current clients or patients are listening, they will know that there are a lot of questions. And sometimes I'll use a coaching wheel with them so that they can see all of the areas that are affected to give that holistic care. And that's why I think that's why I love what I do, because I've got my general practice knowledge, I've got my menopause knowledge, I've got my counselling knowledge, and I'm a midlife woman. That knowledge too. I'm a mother of two teenagers as well. So yeah.
As a woman, with all these things going on in the background, it would never have occurred to me, actually, that some of the things I might feel or think were necessarily connected to the menopause, because there's an awful lot of else kind of stuff going on that queers the whole picture, that makes it difficult to pick apart, oh, well, this is actually because of menopause. It wouldn't have occurred to me.
Yeah.
To what extent do you have women that haven't thought about it necessarily being menopause?
Many, absolutely. Although it's becoming more and more thought about, isn't it? It's more and more in the arena now. Menopause is more in the arena. Mental health is more in the arena. So I think, you know, we're joining up the dots eventually. But I mean, I first started having symptoms when I was about 46, 46 and a half. And at the time, I didn't actually think about the fact that they were perimenopausal, which seems quite embarrassing now. So I turned 49 a couple of weeks ago. And so my first signs realistically were when I was about 46 and a half in terms of my emotional well-being. So it's not surprising that women that aren't menopause specialists or counsellors or whatever don't necessarily join the dots, because I didn't.
I want to come and talk more about your own experiences, Sam, but just before we do that, let me say that if you're listening to this and all of this is charming with you, then do check out the Mikey's Line Mental Health and the Menopause support groups. They offer face-to-face and online support with the aim of helping you to understand your menopause symptoms and feel empowered to do something about them. You'll find a link with the Mikey's Line details in the show notes, or head for mikeysline.co.uk and then click on the support services page. We'll also put Sam's details in the show notes, of course. So Sam, let's come back to your own experiences as a woman in the middle years, as you've said. So you started getting symptoms.
Yeah.
Didn't necessarily associate them with being perimenopausal.
No.
How did all that unfold and develop? And where did your symptoms go in terms of mental health?
Yeah, so sure. So like I said, it was about 3.5 years ago. So we all were also in probably the second or third lockdown at that stage as well, which brought with it its own challenges, both at work and at home. And I'd sort of started crying in two or three work meetings, and that wasn't normal for me. That was not something that happened. And I thought, I wasn't embarrassed, I just thought, crikey. I mean, at the time I felt that my knowledge about a couple of things was being undermined, and I think that's what triggered me. But yes, I did cry in two or three work meetings and thought, well, that was that, yeah, didn't know where that came from. But again, there was a lot of different stresses during the COVID times, at work, being in the medical world. And then equally, the sort of brain fog and word finding type difficulties that many women come to me about. I would literally be in consultations with patients and suddenly not remember the name of a drug that I'd been prescribing for, no less than about 20 years. I'd be staring at the computer, ready to type it in for prescription. I'd be like, okay, now I feel stupid. Trying to dredge my brain for the name of this very common urinary infection antibiotic. So that was quite embarrassing. You thought, my God, the patient's going to think I don't know what I'm doing. That was a bit scary at times, to be honest, and did lead to a bit of anxiety because I thought, what if I make a mistake? That was a real common anxiety. What if I make a mistake? And I had, one or two of my other female colleagues of similar ages saying, it's not just you. And they'll be like, can you remember the name of that drug that? So it does happen. So yeah, the tearfulness in meetings, brain fog, word finding difficulty. The tearfulness didn't last long. That probably only happened two or three times in the space of a year at work. Brain fog and word finding, that's a lot better now. It doesn't often happen now.
It's scary though, not just because, I can totally get why it would be scary for you as a GP.
Yeah.
I have had a bit of that, and fleetingly, again, because it didn't occur to me that it would be anything to do with the menopause and hormone changes, I thought, am I getting demented? What's happening here?
Yeah.
And I would never have actually spoken out about it. I don't think I ever have spoken out about it because it's scary. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want to admit that you feel that you've lost something that you were perfectly capable of doing,
yeah,
what felt like 2 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So fear is a big part of this, isn't it?
Yeah.
So was there a point when you thought something more serious or solid is going on here for me?
I think it when the next kind of symptoms came on, and that was the sort of, at some points, almost crippling nighttime panic attacks that I'd been getting. And again, this is a very common symptom I hear about. And a lot of women will wake up typically between the hours of 1 and 3, 1 and 4, and they'll be feeling sort of anxious. And that was happening to me almost 5 nights out of 7 for 18 months anyway. And I'd be panicking about, had I done this wrong? Had I done that wrong? Did I forget something? It was awful. It was really, really awful. And at that point I thought, I had drastically cut down on my caffeine, but I don't drink any alcohol now, and even then I was only having about one glass every fortnight, so all of that was okay. So I thought, why is this happening? So that's the point I thought, is this my hormones? And I had 3 occasions on which I unfortunately felt like that I would be better off but that my husband and kids would be better off if I wasn't here, because I now was, randomly sort of shouting. I was emotional. I wasn't remembering things. I was awake in the night panicking. I just thought, I'm just useless now. I'm not a very good mum. I'm not a good wife. I'm not even a good doctor. What was the point? So that happened 3 times, those sort of, and I knew what I would do. And I knew where I would go. And on each of the 3 occasions, first time it was like, they'd be better off without me. Why I'm here, I will just go out X, Y, and Z. But by the 3rd time it happened, I was probably terrified is the word I'd use, because I actually didn't. I was like, if I leave the house, I'm worried I'm going to do something. So I said to my husband, I'm really scared because I've been having these thoughts, but please don't let me leave the house today. And bless him, he sort of tucked me up in bed and, fed and watered me for the day. And by the next day, honestly, you'd think it had never happened. And it hasn't. And actually, the very next day, I putting an e-consult. It's just a system of contacting my GP surgery and some GP surgery. And I wanted to start HRT. I was like, that is it. That was my tipping point for HRT. So I went on it for 9 or 10 months. I stopped because I was taking huge allergic reactions to the patches, but that's another story. But thankfully, none of that has returned. So I think that element for me has hopefully passed. There are now sort of other physical changes, but that has passed. And in terms of the fact that I felt so brand new and relieved the next day is another element of it that makes it different from non-perimenopausal sort of depression or suicidality, it can be so, so intermittent because it's hormonally based. It can literally last hours, one day or 2 days, and that's it, it's gone, you feel fine. Whereas in a depression that's not necessarily hormone-driven, as you probably you'll be aware, it can last many days, many weeks, many months. It's very different. And equally, in the perimenopause, the low mood, any of those sort of suicidal thoughts, they happen sort of premenstrually. So as soon as you maybe start bleeding, they're gone. The problem being is if our periods are erratic, we don't necessarily know when we're premenstrual. So just other important differences to the non-perimenopausal mental health symptoms.
How helpful has it been for you to have this kind of insight in terms of now how you can discuss this with other women?
Yeah, I think hugely helpful, because I realise how quickly and how suddenly it can come on. I realise how scary it can be. And I do relay to some of my clients and patients, I do get it. And sometimes I will share my story. I find it hugely helpful. And there's often there is often a reason why we experience things and why life puts us where it puts us. So yeah, I think it happens for a reason and it has made a difference.
And I guess the women who are coming to talk to you already know there's something they need to come and talk about. Mm-hmm. And so they come prepared, you would imagine, to some extent, to have that conversation.
Yeah.
And there may well be people listening to this who are just in the business of feeling these scary things, thinking these scary thoughts, and possibly thinking they're just going a bit crazy with it because it comes in these spikes and then disappears and then back again.
Yeah.
What, if anything, would you be saying to them? Because they're not necessarily people who have been presenting themselves to a practitioner like yourself.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think one thing would be maybe to start keeping a note of these things, noting down how you're feeling, what you're feeling, when you're feeling it, seeing if it's, becoming more frequent, more severe. And I would, recommend speaking to your friends about it. Just speak to somebody, your friends, your family, a friendly work colleague, and you will find that people will share. If you start sharing, there will be people that want to share with you. So that would be one of the first suggestions. In terms of if you're then thinking, could it be menopause, could it be midlife, then you've helpfully already mentioned Mikey's line, but there's things like menopause cafes and midlife mingle groups, and peer support's been found to be very helpful in giving women the sort of space to discuss these feelings that can be normal, can be common, and can be okay, and are likely to pass at some point. That's the other important thing to remember, and that there are ways that we can help them, again, in terms of lifestyle interventions. So if you talk to people will talk back.
And feeling less alone is always a huge plus, isn't it? Let's talk about some of the solutions and some of the answers that are there to kind of help us navigate this complex turn of life, as we acknowledged. So what are some of the answers?
Yeah. So obviously just mentioned one of them, speak to trusted friends, family, colleagues, any sort of peer support groups, social support groups, that some of the ones I just mentioned, like private counselling, obviously we've touched on that, GP appointments, menopause specialists, whether NHS or private. But what I would say is if you are feeling more acutely distressed and need help quickly, then there's obviously helplines, again, like text or phone helplines, like Mikey's line, like SAMH, Scottish Association for Mental Health, Samaritans, Breathing Space, they are there available. But I think a lot of people aren't aware that there's an urgent NHS mental health helpline under 111 if you're having a mental health crisis, distress situation, and they will guide and support you from that point. So it depends of what level of distress we're talking here, but there's a whole variety of options available. And in terms of information, good information about perimenopause and menopause, then there will be websites like Women's Health Concern. That's the sort of patient-friendly information that's developed by the British Menopause Society. The Newson website has useful information. They're all out there.
HRT is obviously something that many of us hear as a an answer to some of menopause symptoms. It's not suitable for all of us. But by the sounds of it, there's lots of other options in terms of talking type therapies or other types of therapies. So if it's not HRT, all is not lost.
HRT is not suitable for everyone, but it is suitable for most women. The vast majority of women can be safely prescribed HRT. It's a very small percentage that can't. But yeah, those that can't, there are antidepressant and anti-anxiety medicines that can be prescribed. And actually, some women want or need HRT and antidepressant or anti-anxiety medications. Okay, so that is an option.
Any idea how long generally, menopause, pre-menopause, you're shaking your head.
Shaking
this is a piece of string question, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it can. Some, like we've said, some women have none of these symptoms. They literally do breeze through it. They have periods, they stop, and that's all. It's all done and dusted. Other women, unfortunately, can be suffering for 10, 15, 20 years. With the physical symptoms particularly, yes.
Is there any research into, if you get something like HRT, how quickly can these symptoms turn around? Do we know how effective it is, particularly when it comes to the mental health?
Okay. I'm not aware of any particular research papers on that, but I know from patients that you can feel, and personal experience, you can feel better within a week or two. If you've got the right dose and it started absolutely within a couple of weeks for the mental health symptoms, you can that quickly. Not always that quickly, and sometimes longer as the doses are altered, but yes, it can be very quick. And the relief of just talking about it as well and knowing that you're getting help.
And knowing that actually what you're going through is just, it's normal.
It's normal. Yeah, it's like, I you know, it probably shouldn't joke about it, but when it's appropriate, it is like puberty in reverse. If you think about it, during puberty, the girls are starting their periods haphazardly. They're irritable, they're emotional, they're trying to find their identity. We are having erratic periods that are then stopping, and we're emotional and raging and trying to find our new identity. So it's like, it's topping and tailing it.
I don't know. I wonder whether part of this is also a grieving process, you know, grieving for that change. For some of us, I think that point of period stopping is a real thought. And that sense of loss. Because that is part of a loss of identity. Your identity as a being of childbearing age is, I would have thought, a significant shift for some of us.
Yeah, it is a significant shift. You're right. You're absolutely right. There is a grief process in there. And it also can make you potentially reminisce about how many years or decades you've been with your partner and everything you've been through together. So that's a process there. We've also got to remember some women have maybe not been able to have children, and they're essentially grieving the fact that that has then not happened naturally for them, and they're grieving the fact that naturally it won't happen to them, and that choice has now been taken away from them. So there's grief linked into it from many different angles.
Sam, thanks so much for talking to me for Speaking of Suicide. It's been such an insight into, I mean, we probably only scraped the surface of this, but a real insight into a complicated problem that affects so many of us. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thanks, Penny. Thanks a lot.
If you want to find out more about Sam's clinic, Whiteside Wellbeing, we've put a link in the show notes. You will also find details, of course, of how to find out more about the menopause support groups at Mikey's Life. If you'd like to share your story for Speaking of Suicide, we'd love to hear from you. You can email bethechange, all one word, at mikeysline.co.uk. Speaking of Suicide is funded by Mikey's Line, and the podcast platform is sponsored by Highlands-based family firm D&D Paving Limited. Speaking of Suicide is an adventurous audio production. Adventurous audio. From idea to ear.